97.1 QMG, the best R&B, and old school, indeed, a brighter day. Kirk Franklin and the family, thanks to my brother in Christ, Joseph Level. Another fine job, as usual, as host of Saturday's edition of Today's Praise. And it's now officially on this 21st day of February, 2009, after a very wonderful McDonald's Rhythms of Triumph sold-out show last night. A big thanks to all of you who made that possible. We appreciate it, and of course, we're looking forward to doing it again next year in 2010. Big thanks, great performance as well to the fellows of Men Condition. Right now, I may be a little hoarse, but I'm here and glad to have you here as well. Saturday's edition of Community Focus now officially begins. Welcome to our public affairs show. We get the word out and let you know what's happening in our community. Two fine gentlemen join me as well. Gentlemen, let me apologize if the voice gets either a little high or a little low.
No.
It's only because I'm still trying to wake up a little bit.
You sound just fine.
Well, thank you. Just a little hoarse from shouting just like everybody else from last night's show. But what a great, not only a great performance from Men Condition, but the opportunity that we as a community-based and community-oriented radio station that we recognized three very wonderful persons who contribute to our community. One who contributed, and we recognized him posthumously last night, and that, of course, that was the late Coach Big House Gaines of Winston-Salem State University. Wonderful wife, Clara, accepted the award, and I did not know until literally when she got on the stage. I found out she was 92 years young.
Wow. Wow.
And I thought that was truly amazing. So when Joseph asked her if she didn't mind sharing her age with the audience, she said, sure, I'm still 25. I'm like, I like Clara.
Yeah.
And, of course, we recognized Mr. Jerry Camp as well, member of the High Point Council, and also Mayor Yvonne Johnson.
Great.
So last night certainly
was awesome.
It was absolutely awesome. A night of first. Well, this, in a sense, is a first, especially for one-third of our Community Focus family.
Yeah.
Let me, first of all, some of the voices you may be hearing this morning, folks, are familiar. Algernon Cash, definitely a regular member of our Community Focus family. Algernon, how are you? Good morning.
I'm doing great. Good morning, Triad. I hope they're doing great, too.
I hope so, too, and always good to have you
but
here.
But you just went to bed a few hours ago, right?
I did. So. You know, I didn't have sleep. I had a nap.
Yeah.
It's all good. I'll get the other required, whatever they say, the recommended
8 hours.
8 hours, yeah. For an adult. I'll get the other five in at some
sometime.
Point.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
but right. You know what? It's just the excitement of having good folk like you, Algernon. Of course, representing Wharton, Gladden & Company, LLC. But it's really a treat to introduce. He's not really a first-timer. I mean, I can't
he
quite.
He was here, but you weren't here that,
okay,
that Saturday morning.
That's right. I must have been on vacation.
Joseph was in for you that morning.
Excellent. So I get to make up for lost time. But this gentleman, Algernon, without question, when he's not on the other side of the radio, and mm-hmm. I mean when he's not listening and calling in and contributing as a member by phone of the show, I finally say it's a pleasure to have him here in person. So let me say good morning to my buddy Fleming L. Amin. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Renee. My pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So good to have you here. Fleming is chairman of the Forsyth County Democratic Party. I've got Algernon. I'm here.
He's my favorite Democrat.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. See, there's bipartisanship already in the studio. We all can get along.
That's right.
Absolutely.
He's my favorite Republican, too.
Yeah. That's right. So there you go. There you go. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the program. Let me go ahead and open up the phone lines here in the studio. 336-680-9710. We want to try to get as much in as we can within the next hour. And so where to begin other than, Algernon, if you don't mind, I want to share a little bit of a background, a history.
Yeah, please, Fleming. Please.
While working at his grandfather's store as a child, Fleming L. Amin learned lessons in self-reliance, honesty, and fair dealing. But one thing that the elder Jackson failed to pass on was his political allegiance. So his grandfather, Fleming Jackson, owned the Jackson Avenue Grocery and Fish Market on East First Street and was fond of calling himself a Lincoln Republican. Fleming, I'm going to have to ask you about that one. El Amin became a Democrat in the early 80s and today hosts the Forsyth County Democratic Party. Again, it's so good to have you here. And, you know, we just had a chance, Fleming, last night at the Rhythms of Triumph to mention that it was 30 days that our now president, Barack Hussein Obama, was inaugurated, was sworn in as our 44th president of these United States of America, and you had an opportunity to be there at all the festivities. Of course, the typical question that everybody gets asked, who was there to witness history in person, what was it like for you personally?
Well, Renee, Thank you for the question.
Oh, you're welcome.
The best way to sum it up is in the article I wrote for the Chronicle entitled Amazing Grace. Yeah. Because as a spiritual experience for me personally and my grandkids and my five adult children, it was a spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. Just to be among a sea of humanity with one common purpose, recognizing and witnessing a historical change in our way of thinking about each other and in our way of electing the first African-American president. Absolutely. And I had a chance to go by George Washington's old mansion, in fact, to pay my homage to the slaves who helped build that mansion. And I just reflected there and had a little prayer and said, listen, ancestors, tomorrow, one of your own kind will be elected for the first African-American president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
So rest in your spirits and be showers blessings from on high again. So I had to make that little pilgrimage myself over there to Mount Vernon before going to the inauguration the following Tuesday.
Right. And let me add a beautiful picture, by the way, of you and Mrs. El Amin preparing to attend one of the inaugural balls. That's also in the paper as well.
Yeah, I had my two daughters with me, too.
Oh, great, great.
The four of us went to the Southern Ball.
Okay.
And had a wonderful time.
Great.
I was expecting more food for the amount of money we paid. No hot food was available, just chips and dip and salsa.
Oh. You know, there's nothing worse
all
than
that
when
money
you,
that
I know
spent,
your hard-earned dollars. Not necessarily at work in the food department, anyway.
Yeah.
But I wanted to share, because I'm just skimming over, Fleming, part of your wonderful article about inauguration trip reflections. And if you don't mind, I would like to share this with our QMG family this morning.
Thank you, my brother.
Oh, you're welcome. Amazing Grace on Monday, January 19th and Tuesday, January 20th. How sweet the sound of over 2 million people representing a sea of humanity in Washington, D.C. as we watch the inauguration ceremonies of our 44th President, Barack Obama. So many people greeting each other on a cold winter day, warmed the atmosphere, and charged the occasion with a sense of thanksgiving. People came from all over the country to witness this historical, and many would say a spiritual, occasion. I was fortunate to have four of my five adult children, two granddaughters, and two family friends in my entourage. I liked it. Fleming has an entourage. You go ahead and put your vans in.
Yeah.
We traveled in two vans to check in at Bethesda, Maryland on Sunday, January the 18th. Truly amazing. And to just be in that, shall we say, Fleming, sea of people who witnessed the exact same thing that you did, basically, and everyone was just coming together beautifully as a country, I think that's what that's really all about. Algernon, where were you on that particular day?
I think I was working that day. Unfortunately, I wasn't having the enlightened experience that that Fleming was, but I did catch parts of the inauguration on television. And some people would say I probably had the best seat in the house, given the millions of people that were walking around in D.C. in the streets of D.C. But clearly, the election of President Obama, Barack Obama, was historical, remarkable, and I think it ushered in a new wave of change. And when I say change, I don't mean from a political standpoint, and not necessarily a change of government, but definitely a change in culture, and then I think a change in perception of people. So,
right.
Partisan issues aside, I think those are some of the important things about the election.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned color, because this is an absolute perfect transition to kind of get into one of the many topics, gentlemen, that we're going to cover in the next few minutes. And Fleming, I'll start with you. Your interest in continuing a discussion on revisiting the color line, both present and past.
It was part of a panel discussion sponsored by the Forsyth County Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
We had a panel discussion with about maybe 10 community leaders. And they all shared their experiences of the civil rights movement, et cetera.
Right.
My focus was from a book written by J.A. Rogers entitled Nature Knows No Color Line.
Mm-hmm.
Because we really have to assess honestly in our souls, which is where our true picture of ourselves lies, what does it mean to call each other by race identification? And so I posed a question. I said, listen, if you think of a fruit like a pear, what comes to mind? Clear picture. If you think of a tree, clear picture comes to mind.
Right.
But when you say race, a little confusing there, because I think it diminishes the human soul to identify each other on the color line scheme. And I give much credit to the American spirit now, who went beyond that to elect someone based on his character as they perceived him, versus simply, as Dr. King said, the color of my skin. So I think we need to really look at this thing a little closer and really challenge ourselves to rethink how do we see each other and establish a human connection instead of just dividing each other along the old color scheme, which only benefits those who benefit from division.
Right. And you know, Fleming makes a really, really big point there, because that's what I often want to help people to understand, that as long as we focus on goals that divide us and separate us, we will never really reach, we will never be able to transcend some of the issues that we have in our country or even in the world in general. We have to be able to focus on a unified goal. I mean, you know, us as people, we have divided ourselves into black and white and various races. But when you really look at it, we are all one species. We're all human beings.
That's right.
And it's just so happened that, you know, various ones of us have a different shade of color. Even within the African-American culture in itself.
That's right.
We will... We're prejudiced against some that are light skinned, some that are dark
skinned.
But you want to know, this is the big point. I'd love to hear Fleming comment on this. The only reason why we really divide people in color, I don't think people stop and say, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. Like, why did we start doing that?
Right.
And when you look at early human civilizations, they used to divide people in color because it was a defense mechanism. That's how they knew if you were in my clan or not, because if you had a different shade of color, then you must have been from another part of the world or whatever. But that was important to them back then, because if you weren't in my clan or if you weren't in my group, mm-hmm. you may attack us. You may steal our women. You may take our food. That was all very important back in the early human civilization.
Right.
It's just so happened that we've established this, mm-hmm. and we still do it.
Exactly.
We still do something, mm-hmm. and we still practice something, not really knowing why we're doing it, but just because we do it.
Exactly. Before you respond to that, Fleming, it just made me think, and you know, growing up as a little girl myself, when the doll test from back in the day took place, where you had a little black girl who basically had a choice of two dolls, obviously one black, mm-hmm. one white,
mm-hmm.
and she picked the little white doll. And, of course, the question was asked, well, why did you decide to pick that particular doll? I never really thought about that. You know, like a typical girl growing up, playing with dolls, never really looked at the color, but then when I got into school and kind of heard about that story and said, well, wait a minute, you know, that kind of put things in a whole different perspective as to why did we pick, you know, the lighter doll that
sure.
doesn't necessarily represent us, at least color-wise.
That's right. That's right.
But we were just taught, and it was indoctrinated in our way of thinking that, you know, the white doll was supposed to be, you know, represents the purity. It's
exactly.
It's a good doll, and anything that isn't that is supposed to be bad.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Renee, because that evidence was used by former Thurgood Marshall in
exactly.
his NAACP suit mm-hmm. to challenge, you know, the sole, it was actually called the Plessy versus Ferguson case
right.
that established segregation as some rule of law in mm-hmm. America back in 1896. And, of course, it was reversed in 1954 with that right. Supreme Court case, Brown versus Board of Education. That represents to me this internal image of ourselves that we have to come to grips with.
Yeah.
If you don't see beauty within yourself, when you wake up in the morning before the lights are cut on, when you see an image of yourself, do you have an internal view of yourself as being just as equal as anyone else?
Right.
That's your real value system.
Exactly.
The rest of it comes about, if you look at it historically, the oldest society that used race as a scheme of political and economic disadvantage was done in India over 5,000 years ago. And they used a scripture, unfortunately, the old Vedic scriptures, to say that the brighter you were, the closer you were to God. The darker you were, the closer you were to that other source, causing all bad things to happen. They got so ridiculous, they called these people untouchables. So even today, if you go in the southern part of India, politically and culturally, some of those people are still coming out of that kind of identification because
mm-hmm.
they were not educated,
yeah.
they were not given access to political decision-making authority. And when I was going to school in Arizona, I had a friend who happened to be from India, and he came up in the southern part. And he said, Fleming, we are the most prejudicial people that you can imagine if we allow a culture, because they had four divisions, and you mm-hmm. couldn't go from one to the other.
Okay.
Like in America, we can
right.
Make that break.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a class system.
Right.
It's called the old caste. It's the oldest caste
yeah.
system around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the apartheid in South Africa duplicated that. The segregation system here in America duplicated that. And that word didn't come about until the 1700s when people started using race for economic advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, it was based on the country you were from.
Right.
You were a friend of mine because you're a countryman of mine, mm-hmm. and you identify from the country you were from, not by the context or the color of your skin. So it's a big issue with us, I think. Even, unfortunately, as W. Du Bois said in his book, you know, the souls of black folk. This is 1905 that wrote this book. It was a double consciousness. How do we fit in, comfort in our own skin, and see ourselves as equal to anyone else that we run into? And that's a big challenge today. So we got to really look at this thing and look closer now, especially with our national politics having changed the way it has changed.
Absolutely. And having an African-American president. So I think it is fitting in 2009. But did we really look past the color line when we as a nation, before we went to the voting booth?
You know, I still often question if we really did that or not. And I think people will question that. And I think history will probably end up sort of proving, you know, what really occurred. But the thing that really disadvantages us that I think we miss out on is that there really is no such thing as an outside there or inside here. We're all very much connected. I think that we continue to miss this very big point that the very rock that we live on called Earth is just one big living organism, and we're all connected. Mm-hmm. We're all part of it. And it's a shame because we waste so much time trying to focus on the puzzle piece, and we missing the whole puzzle. And it's like we're just a very small piece of a much, much larger puzzle. And we are independent because we're creators, and you can create your own life.
Exactly.
But you are very much interdependent with everybody else around you, and it doesn't matter what color they are.
That's true.
And as long as you continue to view the world like that,
you're
shortchanging yourself, and you're stunting your own growth.
Let me throw this out to you, gentlemen. This really, in a way, kind of indirectly ties into what we're talking about. Here's the funny story, and I don't know even how I got on this idea. I have a tendency to Google things a lot here at the station. And one morning after I got off the air, I know what it was. Fleming and Algernon, I saw the Temptations movie.
Okay.
And
one of my favorite groups.
One of my favorite groups, too. And it was so interesting when you look at the biography. And you know, okay, some of this stuff is going to be fabricated. A lot of it is based on facts. Most of it coming from the autobiography of the sole surviving member of the Temptations, Otis Williams. Long story short, went to Google that, and I think I had gone through everybody within the group. And when you think about the Temptations, they've had, oh my goodness, I can't even keep up with the number of folk who have replaced so-and-so and so-and-so.
They're like on the fourth or fifth
round.
Exactly.
But to still be around and to still be performing after five decades. So anyway, I came across Berry Gordy, Googled him by chance. Interesting background with this man, by the way, and found out that I think it was his great-great-great-grandfather who was a white farm owner who got, I'm pretty sure, one of his slaves at the time pregnant. Hence, you know, members of the family were born. But long story short, and I kind of glanced at it and I said, well, this is interesting. His family lineage on down the line initially ties him to another president of the United States, former President Jimmy Carter, I believe, are like six distant cousins.
Wow.
Wait a minute, it goes even further. Here's the icing on the cake. Between those two families, there is a lineage between the two of them and add Elvis Presley. And I'm like,
wow,
get out of here. And so when I thought
six
about it.
6 degrees of separation.
Absolutely.
That's what they
say,
yeah.
And you talk about coming full circle. And I bring that story up to make this point that, Algernon, I think you're absolutely right. When we look at it deep down, we are really interconnected and related to each other. We may not readily admit it, but when you think about it.
We are.
We really are.
Our choices and our decisions impact other people.
Yeah.
We don't always remain conscious of that.
Right.
And honestly, it's I don't know. It's almost become funny to me that we focus on something as small as race. Yeah. Like we get so focused on something as small as a person's color, and we are missing
the
big boat, missing the whole fact of why we're really here, what our whole purpose is, and what we're really here to achieve. Trust me, folks, it is so much more bigger than the color of your skin. That is not why we're here at
Absolutely.
All.
Absolutely. And we need to get to that point. And do you think it's possible, Fleming, not within just the first year of President Obama's administration, but if he does happen to get reelected for a second term, where do you think we will be as far as that color line, let's say 8 years from now?
My hope is that we'll be more honest
mm-hmm.
and really challenging our previous thinking about that matter. Right. I consider that kindergarten mentality.
Yeah.
Because in kindergarten, you learn how to distinguish colors.
Mm-hmm.
But some people spend a lifetime in the kindergarten.
Some people still in kindergarten.
Right. That's true.
Now, that's not to reduce the importance of ethnicity and culture value.
No.
Right.
Now, some people confuse the two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, if I may use a quote from Jay Rogers, he sums this stuff up like this. He says, the evident truth of each human being is that we are a unique race unto ourselves, a variety in himself, a variety through which runs fundamental unity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that relates to what Algernon was saying earlier. We're all multi-ethnic and multi-culture, especially in America.
Absolutely.
You know, I have a picture of my great-grandmother, looks like any typical Caucasian person, mm-hmm. with her daughter standing beside her, my grandmother on my mother's side, mm-hmm. charcoal beautiful,
wow.
with my mother beside her, mm-hmm. my wife beside her, our first son. It's five generations on one picture. Mm. It's like a sea of humanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how much time I've wasted. I waste all my time in the kindergarten if I just dealt with, well, what does that mean? You
know, exactly.
Family.
Now, don't be surprised if the next time you come hear me speak, I got that kindergarten line in there.
That's right. Well, we know where
you
borrowed it from.
Don't be shocked if you hear that, okay?
We'll know where you borrowed it from. But gentlemen, as we get ready to go take our first quick break, and then we're going to come back, definitely for those who are listening this morning, we appreciate your listenership. And you know how to reach us, certainly, if you have questions or comments, 336-680-9710. But Fleming, I wanted to go back to your I'm going to refer to it as your fruit theory.
Okay.
In regards to the color line and how we view each other in terms of race. Wouldn't it be so nice to make sort of that reference or that parallel? Because like you said, when you make reference to fruit, you don't immediately think about apples being red. But then when you think about it, well, they're more than red, they're green, they come in all sorts of color varieties.
There you go.
You can say the same about a pear and basically really any type of fruit.
And so we call each other, you know, white people or black people.
Right.
We're human beings.
We're human beings.
We are humans.
And that was the case when God created us in his image.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure when he was in that process, well, let me create some people who are going to be black, or let me create some people who are going to be Chinese or Indian or white or whatever the case may be. No, in the image of him is in his likeness. And I doubt very seriously color was on his mind at the time. But just to have a group of people who were to be a representation of him and to follow and to do his word.
That's a whole program.
I'm telling you.
It is.
So we will have to schedule that one for another time. But gentlemen, let's kind of switch gears here a little bit. I do want to take our first break. But when we come back, speaking of President Obama, now that we've addressed the issue of the color line, let's address the issue of the bipartisan line. I want to talk about, of course, the recent $787 billion economic stimulus plan that was recently passed. And I think initially we are looking at an administration in which I think one of the biggest hopes that President Obama was trying to accomplish was to have a bipartisan administration.
Yep.
I think the first for, if I'm not mistaken, and gentlemen, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the first time we've really had a president that's been willing to address that as an issue is to have a bipartisan government in which we can kind of...
No, I wouldn't say that.
The very first...
just about every president has at least tried it, or
right.
at least makes comments towards it.
Mm-hmm.
If you look just 8 years ago, remember what George Bush ran on in the election. He says, I'm a uniter, I'm not a divider, I'll cross
You're
the
right
aisles.
About that, yeah.
And he got in office and he did the
exact
opposite of that.
Yeah.
You look back to Clinton did the same thing. It's all down the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always have presidents that's going to say, hey, yeah, I'm going to work with both parties. I'm not saying that President Obama didn't work with both parties.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that short term, or let's look at it this way, long term, I think that President Obama made a mistake by signing that bill. Short term, he did win
mm-hmm.
because it was his bill, it was his plan, that's what he wanted to get through. On the short term level, I think he won because he got the bill through. Long term, I think he lost a little bit of political capital doing it, and that's the issue.
All right, well, let's address that issue. Fleming, I'm going to have you give the rebuttal, so to speak, when we get back from break. 336-680-9710. Already off to a good start, gentlemen. Can't believe this half hour has gone by so fast, but We got another half hour to cover. And that we will do. Much more Saturday's edition of Community Focus coming up here on the best R&B and old school and close to our communities. We're 97.1 QMG. 97.1 QMG, the best R&B in old school. And another number you should know very well is 336-680-9710. I want to welcome those of you just joining us. We are back from break with more Saturday's edition of Community Focus. I'm Renee Vaughn. Again, I want to welcome my Community Focus family with me this morning. First and foremost, Algernon Cash with Wharton Gladden & Company, LLC, and Fleming L. Amin, chairman of the Forsyth County Democratic Party. We continue here on Community Focus, and gentlemen, right before the break, we touched on the recent passing of President Barack Obama's economic stimulus plan. Fleming, I do believe you officially have the rebuttal of Mr. Algernon Cash here, and what's your take on this, both the short term and the long term of this?
The short term, let's look at the name of the actual act itself.
Mm-hmm.
The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And, you know, as a student of economics, I know there are four components to how you measure gross domestic product.
Mm-hmm.
Those four components simply are consumer spending, investment, export-imports differences, and basically what the government does. Those are the four components of how you measure, what we create
right.
in a given year. Now, you got to assimilate each one of those to really have an effective product on the end. Given our current economy.
Right.
Now, President Obama has seen the need to get the government involved on a larger scale than we've had since Roosevelt.
Right.
But why is that necessary? Mm-hmm. Because we are, in fact, in a recession. And some parts of our community is worse than that. So how do you stimulate the whole economy if you don't involve the government? You can't rely just on the market. Now, I'll tell you why. I used to be a Chase Manhattan Bank employer. I used to work for David Rockefeller when I first came out of grad school.
Mm-hmm.
I know the works of Wall Street to a degree.
Right.
And I know that the market drives itself,
mm-hmm.
stimulated by profit motive. And that's good. That's what America is all about. But we get to the point now where that drive has created, for the first time, absolute greed. And hurt people like Madoff. How do you take $50 billion from someone who trusts you with their investment
right.
and lose $50 billion?
It does.
Because there was a lack of any kind of, I would call, sincere regulations to make sure those kind of things did not happen. So if you go back to the first equation I gave you, you have government spending, you have investment, and you got to have a little savings of investments, right?
Right.
You have the difference between what we export and what we import, and you have, of course, consumption. So what President Obama is trying to do is stimulate the consumption from us, involve the government, with the hope that we can do something about encouraging people to invest more in our economy. Because there's a huge question now about what's going to happen to the banking community.
Right.
Two more banks about to fall under.
Yes.
There's a discussion about perhaps the government getting involved in owning
banks. With that, too.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds to someone who studies economics like a nightmare about to be created.
Right.
But I just think back, Renee, to the little store I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Grocery and Fish Market.
Yes.
When times were hard, my grandfather would shake your hand and let you have something on credit if you needed it.
Right.
If you didn't pay him on Friday, he'd be mm-hmm. looking for you. He was his own enforcer, his own regulator. But that helped the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
And people came back, even when he passed away in 63. People who owed him money came to pay them because they felt like they owed him that.
Right.
In our economy right now, this sense of connection with each other, community ownership,
right.
community investment has almost become so quiet you barely hear it
mm-hmm.
until Obama came along. And his whole inauguration address boils down to two sentences. We have to really get away from discord and conflict and approach more a unity of purpose as a country. And people are suffering. So do you do nothing when people are suffering, or do you do something to help them out? I think this effort on his part is tremendous to help those from the bottom up versus what Reagan did, which was called trickle-down economics.
Economics, right.
And the result of that was that you had people who had the know-how of finances, who made billions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
with grandmama and granddaddy, who don't have that kind of insight,
right.
Went on food stamps. And so now we have a federal government who's, you could say, giving food stamps to Wall Street, giving food stamps to banks
mm-hmm.
in the billions of dollars, but they want to criticize individuals who need help from the government as
right.
being somewhat less than deserving. So I applaud President Obama. I have a little bit more confidence in my friend Algernon on the long-term benefit.
But you know what? I like the fact that
you
can have differences and still be friends.
No, Fleming makes some really good points.
Right.
He does.
Right.
We are definitely in a severe recession. We've been in a severe recession since December 2007. And we do need some stimulus in order to get us out of the recession. Fleming is also correct in saying that typically in a situation like this, it does require a certain level of government intervention in order to get you through something like this. Now he brought Roosevelt into it, so I'm gonna rewind and go back to the 30s here.
Let's go back. Okay.
Roosevelt did introduce the New Deal, one of the biggest social programs that or social works include social works projects that we've seen in America. But the problem with the New Deal was, first of all, it only stimulated the economy for a short period of time. It actually didn't work, and job losses were starting to rise once again. Mm-hmm. What actually brought the economy out in the 30s was the war. When the war started and we had a massive level of government spending ramping up for the war, that level of activity is what really brought the economy out. I mean, brought the economy out the doldrums. It wasn't necessarily the New Deal. Now, what did the New Deal do for us? It actually created large-scale programs like Social Security that's now broken, that we could never get off the books because it was created in the New Deal package and we were never able to roll it back. Now you fast forward to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and now you've got President Obama creating a program like temporary assistance for needy families that I agree with Fleming, people do need help. But the problem that comes out of these kind of situations is that you end up creating these large-scale entitlement programs, and then once we make it through the problem, we can't get it rolled back. Think about income taxes. Anybody ever said, well, where does income taxes come from? Income taxes were imposed to help us fight World War I. That's when they initiated them. They were supposed to be rolled back. Here it is almost 100 years later,
right,
we
still
paying income taxes.
Tax, right.
So that's the problem when you introduce legislation like this and then don't have a mechanism for it to burn off. Now, once again, I'm going to agree with Fleming in saying we need the stimulus. It's like the article that I wrote last week.
Right.
We need a shot in the arm, mm-hmm. but do we have the right medication in the needle?
Right.
That's the biggest thing.
And is it going to be a matter of whether we become addicted to it?
And is it going to work the way it's supposed to? This mm-hmm. stimulus plan that they just signed, this plan or this bill creates 32 new entitlement programs. 32. That's going to be very hard for us to roll back. I also believe that within the stimulus plan, we could have got more bang for our buck if we would have did across the board payroll tax cuts for people. If you could show up on Friday and get your check this Friday, mm-hmm. and you are automatically making more money this Friday than you were making last Friday, you are going to consume, or you're either going to pay down your debts, you're going to do something to improve your situation. I'm saying that we needed the stimulus. I'm okay with even the amount of money they spent.
Right.
I'm questioning the direction that the money actually went into.
Can I respond, please?
Sure, absolutely. By the way, let me also, as a footnote, Algernon, your article on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is actually available on your website, algernoncash.com.
Yeah, you can go to algernoncash.com and I over now this is another point here. I read the 1,073-page American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Now, I'm going to tell you, Renee, it took me 7 days to read it. Now, that's a problem because they issued the bill, and Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. only gave congressional members 24 hours to read it before they had to vote on it. It took me 7 days to read it.
So imagine what kind of pressure they were under to get it in
within
24 hours.
But the question becomes, did they even read it?
Yeah.
Or did they just vote on it?
Yeah.
And I think they just voted on it.
Yeah. On that note,
okay.
Rebuttal time. Fleming, there, have at it.
We need more time.
Yeah, we need a couple hours for this one.
Yeah, we do.
Just in terms of process when it comes to legislation, most lawmakers just read the executive summary.
Yeah.
Just because of a time factor. This bill was so important, my hope is that they did more than just executive summary.
Mm-hmm.
But my inclination is that's for most of them, that's all they had an opportunity to do. I was on a program the other evening with Congressman Mel Watt, and he actually gave us a cap of how much money each county in his district mm-hmm. would receive from the stimulus package. That I've studied in detail, and I'll be glad to share a copy of that with anyone who would like to have a copy of that. But the bigger issue to me is this. Even going back to the Roosevelt era, and we were in the midst of World War II, all of that spending, even for the military, came from one pocket of money, and that was the government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some did come from people making tanks, etc. But the biggest chunk of that stimulation package was government-based. If you think about the people who did not have any access to Social Security during the era of history, how much they benefited. For example, at one point, if you were an elderly person in this country, if your kids didn't take care of you, shame on you. Because there was nothing from the federal government to assist you once you turned 65.
Right.
There was no Medicaid. There was no Medicare. Mm-hmm. That's a tremendous, I think, government program to help those in the greatest need. Now, what's the option? To say that that program did not work because now we have not figured out a way to make sure it's continuous.
Right.
Now, that, to me, is just a downside of these presidential people who came into office, and they did nothing to address that issue. That's why it's accumulated such a great number.
Mm-hmm.
Entitlement to me is sort of an inflammatory word because it suggests that indeed people have been given something they're not really due. But what's the responsibility of government? If you look in our Constitution, you have six reasons for government. And I encourage all the listeners out there, go back and read your Constitution,
right.
Identify with those six reasons, mm-hmm. and then hold your elected officials accountable.
Absolutely.
One of those six simply states that, you know, we the people of the United States, in order to form a perfect union, establish justice, promote the general welfare, and I won't go through the whole thing because mm-hmm. of time constraints, but how do we promote the general welfare?
Right.
We've got to have those least in need.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to help those least in need. And I'm convinced that this package, the way it's designed, is really for the first time helping those least in need, and that goes counter to people who benefited so much from helping just the top 1%. That's the big issue now in the public, that you hear people on radio even shouting on Wall Street. About what President Barack Obama was going to do.
Right.
I mean, shouting just a little 2-year-old kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, I don't believe this kind of, you know.
Now, he was talking about the house. In defense of Rick, he was talking about the foreclosure plan, which is a little different. I agree with Fleming that we do have people out there that are challenged, mm-hmm. and I believe they need support. I do believe they need help. I just continue to question that. I wonder if the government really got it right on this thing. And just the way they structured it.
Right.
That's all.
Good rebuttal from you both. I want to start another one as we get ready to go back to another quick commercial break here. I want to switch gears a little bit on this one as well and talk about the media's role in all of this, because interestingly enough, this came up in conversation just last night with some coworkers of mine. Is the media's perception of our economy, from what we have been seeing on television and hearing on the radio and reading in the newspapers, is it really as bad as what we've been seeing and hearing? That's the question I want to address. Fleming, I'm going to give you a chance to start that rebuttal, and then Algernon, you follow up.
Sure,
we're going to do that in the next few minutes. And anyone who wants to get in on this rebuttal, you're more than welcome at 336-680-9710. As we come back with much more Saturday's edition of Community Focus right here, 97.1 QMG, the best R&B in old school, and back for the last remaining minutes of Community Focus.
So we on the last leg.
Doggone it. I'm telling you, we're going to do something to stretch these hours. It's just not enough minutes, really, especially with this great topic of discussion that we have this morning. Again, Algernon Cash and also Fleming Alameen joining me on the program. Gentlemen, all I can say is I think we're going to have to start bringing the conversations we have off air into the conversation as well. Listen, we've got the phone lines ringing. Let's take a caller this morning, 336-680-9710. It's Saturday morning. Thank you for listening to the program, and you are on Community Focus. How are you?
Just fine. Good morning.
Good morning to you,
sir.
Good morning.
I just wanted to ask, there was something floating around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone had seen it. Someone had put out that if you had given everyone 18 and over, assuming that it's 200 million people, $425,000, that would equal the amount of the stimulus, then the government's going to take half of that back for taxes. Then the people have enough to pay off the bills, you know, if they want to save for their kids' education.
Mm-hmm.
And now you really covered three of those four principles that were talked about. You know, you giving people money to spend and put back in the economy. You had government intervention. And then if people save the money and put it in the banks are going to invest that money and have money for loans and whatnot. Why doesn't the government give the money where it's really needed to the people? instead of giving it to the people who run the banks, for them to go and have expensive vacations and just squander the money.
You know, your caller asked some legitimate questions.
Yes, he did. I have a feeling he might have been listening to part of our conversation off air.
Yeah. He asked some legitimate questions there. But you know, the one thing that I want people to understand and try to keep in mind is that when they say they're given X amount of billions of dollars to Citigroup or Bank of America or whatever bank it is, they're not giving it to any bankers. It's not saving bankers. Bankers are indirectly getting saved because mm-hmm. of it. But understand what we're really trying to do is protect and help our financial system recover. That's what that's really about. We're trying to inject liquidity into our financial system. And this is important to do because without a properly working financial system, we would have an economy that would fall apart and a country that would I believe, would fall into chaos. So bankers are getting saved, and I know that that really gets to the taxpayer because your money, it seems like you're saving their jobs, and they are getting saved, but we are trying to save the financial system. The equation he gave about the 200 million people and giving away the money, I'm not certain about that, but if you read my article, I do make a point in there. President Obama says that he wants to create or save 4 million jobs. If you look at the amount of money in the stimulus bill, that equates to about $197,500 a job. I own a company, and I assure you, as a private citizen, I can create one job for less than $197,000. So once again, you get back to the point of the money that they're spending in the stimulus bill. It may be, I agree that they need to spend the money, but are they spending it in the correct way?
And on the same note, I think the caller has some very valid points.
Absolutely.
I was simply asking one question. If you were to honestly ask yourself, what are your spending habits today? Mm-hmm. And how would they change if indeed you got that amount of money in hand? Would you save it?
Right.
Would you spend it? And just be honest about that, because a lot of people perceive they would do something, but they don't say, look, I just got $100 in my pocket and I spent $101 trying to get something I don't need. And that unfortunately represents a mindset in our economy right now.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, Fleming, because it made me think, gentlemen, as we're having this conversation, how we have kind of become, as a society in general, it seems that we buy the things that we want as opposed to buy the things that we really need.
Immediate gratification.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I teach psychology as one of the courses, as well as sociology and some other things. But in psychology, there's a word called adaptation. And it means basically this. You decide basically how to decrease what your perceptions take in based on sensations, our five senses.
Right.
Right. And your brain determines the value to that. Now, our habit has been our brain saying, I see it on TV, I need it. I heard it on the radio, and I love the radio, don't get me wrong. I got to have it.
Right.
But advertisement promotes values, unfortunately. And we have so many people so sensitive to consumerism, we lose other values that I think are even more important. For example, family time. Mm-hmm. How often do we hear on the TV, sit down and have a meal with your family?
Yeah.
Sit down and spend quality time with that child abuser you brought into this world through no... You know, because you were having some fun, perhaps, but the child is innocent. How often do we hear education is important mm-hmm. in the general media?
Right.
Or cooperation versus conflict mm-hmm. in the general media?
Mm-hmm.
So our habits, unfortunately, are influenced by the culture that we're part of. We have to always have an internal value system beyond what the media images are.
Right. Absolutely. Caller, let me thank you. Number one, you stimulated, no pun intended there, a good conversation with your suggestions, and we really appreciate your call this morning.
Can I make one last point?
Absolutely.
I think of that equation, mm-hmm. and if you had a married couple, after the government would take the taxes away from mm-hmm. that woman, that would be $595,000 for that household to pay off their debt, to save for the kids' education and whatnot. I mean, that... To me, that makes more sense.
I guess the biggest question would be is if the government was to begin just making direct grants to individuals or even to families, like how would that money get paid back? How would that money get back to the Treasury? And that would be that would be sort of the missing, I guess. Fleming, jump in there if you got an idea, but I'm sort of curious about that.
It's not the question. If you think back just historically in Germany in World War II, the reason Adolf Hitler was successful, his real name was Erich Eichmann, he told the German people, who at that point could not buy a loaf of bread without a basket of German marks, that's how devalued their currency had become. He convinced those people that indeed if you follow me, follow my psychology of blaming people for what you have about economy, you will be around for 1,000 years in the Third Reich. It was a game he played on them, a mental game. And you cannot put a lot of money in the economy without inflation also increasing. That's why it has to be a measured program. It has to be a transparent program. It has to be a program based
exactly.
on accountability.
Yeah.
Because inflation basically is more dollars chasing fewer goods. Another simple example, I grew up in a grocery store. I used to sell a loaf of bread for 20 cents a loaf. Now it costs almost $2.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to examine how inflation will be impacted when you talk about injecting that amount of money into the economy. And it's a serious issue because it impacts a lot of other things as well. I just wish we had more time. But
we don't.
You know, let me make one more point, though, before we transition. The thing that to also consider is that when you hear about the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, it's to round it up, it's about a $790 billion bill. Keep in mind that all of that's really not spending. So all of that's really not real dollars hitting
right.
the table. Some of that's, you know, a good portion of that, honestly, is tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
And they have sort of various forms that they're able to sort of, you know, get to that $790 billion deal.
Right.
You know, even if you look inside of the bill, $70 billion of the bill is related to the alternative minimum tax fix.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that every year.
Right.
Every year we put that fix in place. But that's about a $70 billion fix. So it gets wrapped up in the bill, and it makes it seem like you're sort of, you know, you're really truly spending $790 billion in cash.
Right.
So that's what I would, you know, and oftentimes when I'm on Buster Show, people call in and ask the same question
mm-hmm.
that the caller had about why don't we just give money to the people. But it's a little more, I know to people when they hear the sound bites about how much money we're spending, they're like, why don't they just give it to us?
Right.
But it's actually a little more complicated than that.
Yeah. Caller, we appreciate you. You know what? Gentlemen, let's do this because I just feel that if I don't get you back on here next week, that we're going to be cheated because I feel like we're just really getting into the heart of our subject
matter. I definitely
matter.
Don't mind coming back.
Do you mind
hanging
coming?
Out with Fleming?
Okay.
I would love, but I've got to be in Detroit next weekend.
Oh, okay.
If I didn't have that commitment, mm-hmm. I would be right here.
Okay.
And we're going to have some folks from the Nussbaum
okay.
Center.
That's right.
So maybe we'll roll into
that.
We'll come back next month.
Let's do that. Caller, thank you so much. And please call back anytime.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And gentlemen, like I said, my gosh, our time is up. I don't like this portion of the show. That's the only thing is that you have to say bye-bye. But Algernon and Fleming, thank you so much. I'm going to save my question to what I was alluding to earlier about the media's role in all of this. And if, like I said, from what we're seeing and hearing, is the economy as bad as to what we're getting explained through the media.
We can close on that. I would say, I'd love to hear what Fleming has to say, but I would say that in the beginning that the economy was not as bad as what it was being portrayed mm-hmm. as. To be honest with you, now when you look at the statistics, mm-hmm. you look at the numbers, we are dealing with a very rough economy.
Yeah.
And the real problem that's going on that we've really got to keep our eyes on mm-hmm. is the rising unemployment.
Right.
We're losing about around 600,000 jobs a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big issue, and the reason why it's a big issue is because if you look at our previous downturn right after the 2000s, all of our job losses were predominantly concentrated in technology. Okay. If you look at the downturn before that, most of our job losses were concentrated in manufacturing. This is a completely different kind of downturn where we're losing jobs in industries across the board. It doesn't matter if you're in financial services, technology, manufacturing, everybody's laying off. And if you look back at the 30s and you look at what happened and sort of what led them into the deep recession or the depression that they went into, it was when unemployment got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Unemployment got out, you know, that horse got out the barn. It caused a deflationary spiral, and it was very hard for them to figure out how to pull out of that economy. In the beginning, we were not dealing with those kind of pressures. In the last three to 6 months, those kind of pressures have come on.
Right.
So I honestly believe that the story the media is portraying at this point mm-hmm. now is dead on.
Okay. Fleming, you have final thoughts on that? Comments?
I wish I had at least an hour, but let me do it very quickly in 2 seconds here. There are two things you want to keep your eye on. There's fiscal policy, and there's also monetary policy. That's basically what the government can do.
Mm-hmm.
It can influence those two. The Federal Reserve influences monetary policy for the most part because they control the interest rates, more or less.
Right.
I think the information we receive from the media in general is one-sided because they don't really tell it's bites. Just like me, you know, falling in love with my wife 35 years ago.
Right.
I mean, it was sound bites. And so I had to get to know the whole person, though.
Exactly.
That's why we're still together
yeah.
today.
Right.
But when it comes to economics, they only give us the worst news
mm-hmm.
The worst news.
And that seems to be
the
it.
Worst news.
Right.
And you don't hear success stories. Like there's a company moving to Davidson County. It's going to employ 300 people.
Right.
And there are other good stories out there.
Yeah. So we just don't hear them enough.
We just don't hear them enough. Mm-hmm. So I think the media has to do a broader job.
Right.
Yes, it's in bad shape. Mm-hmm. A recession, by definition, is three consecutive quarters of decreasing your GDP. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are some successes we should hear more about. And I think we should explore that avenue as well as tell.
We don't have time, but I want to hear what they hear what they are.
Exactly. Well, that's why we're going to have another show on this.
For when I go through my speech this week.
And that's why we're going to have another show on this.
Yeah.
And hopefully by that, things will be a little bit better. Absolutely. Algernon Fleming. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. Appreciate you, as always.
Thank you, Triad.
Absolutely, and looking forward to the next time that we can bring this conversation back to the table. And, of course, thanks to all of you who tune in to Community Focus. Sunday's edition is tomorrow with Joseph Lovell at 6 a.m., but in just seconds, it's the Old School Weekend Show that brings those memories right back at you. Better known as the best of the Tom Joyner Morning Show, and it's coming up here on the best R&B and Old School and close to our communities. Have a great weekend, everyone. On behalf of Algernon Cash, also Fleming El Amin, and I'm Renee Vaughn. Have a great weekend, folks, and keep it right here to 97.1 QMG.